Radio's greatest application is in broadcasting mass entertainment. Probably one of the best ways to get started is to make it a hobby and build an amateur station. It will show you more quickly than anything else whether or not you can succeed in radio.
KBOO, Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The nominating committee meets on the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from our members and from Nutrition Inside, presenting the Nutrition Inside Benefit Show, Saturday, August 16th from 4:30 to 8 p.m. at Ethos Music Center. The event will feature local music and refreshments and supports food justice for incarcerated individuals. More info at nutritioninside.org.
From Pacifica Radio in San Francisco, this is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on the show, Israel using starvation and mass murder of journalists in their U.S. armed and supported genocide in Gaza. 227 journalists targeted and murdered. We'll be joined by Ziad Abbas from the Middle East Children's Alliance and Hani Al-Madoun, Senior Director of UNRWA USA and Code Pink creator Medea Benjamin. All this and more coming up straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Well, the assassination of journalists continues in occupied Gaza, and the Israelis have vowed to essentially either kill or purge everybody from the Gaza Strip. I think Palestinians have a different vision of the future. Joining us to talk about this is our old friend Ziad Abbas, director, executive director of the Middle East Children's Alliance here in the Bay Area. Ziad, welcome back to Flashpoints. It is good to have you with us. First of all, I'd like you to sort of reflect a little bit and talk a little bit about the way in which we're seeing unbelievable amounts, dozens of journalists being gunned down, murdered by the Israelis using U.S. weaponry.
Yes, thank you, Dennis. Yeah, this is what we are witnessing actually for over 22 months right now inside Gaza Strip. And we are witnessing that how Israel targets journalists, photographers, cameramen, not only them, and even their families too, where they are, some of them, they are already assassinated and killed with their families, with their children, with their neighbors, with their parents. And this is, I don't want to say it's something new for us, but Palestinians, they are suffering from this since early, I can say since the beginning of the occupation. We saw many Palestinian journalists and artists, they were assassinated and killed by the Israelis in different ways. And it continued, we have with the all these numbers coming, it's unbelievable. Even you mentioned 227, but in fact, actually, according to Palestinian resources right now, 238 Palestinian journalists killed since October 7th until now, with the six Palestinians they were killed in this massacre for journalism yesterday. And the fact it's happening in front of the world, it's happening in front of the international community, the United Nations, all the governments in the world, it's happening not one time, many times. And You don't see any kind of reaction more than condemnation about what happens. But no one holds Israel accountable, and Israel will continue to do that. And this is not something new. These journalists, they were killed yesterday simply just because they are Palestinian first, and second, because the work they are doing. They are the witnesses. They were the witnesses for what's going on in Gaza, and especially in north of Gaza. Targeting their tent, six journalists, they were inside this tent, and they meant to do that. And Israel, since 22 months, they kill in both ways. First way, the random way where they are shelling, bombing anywhere, no matter who is killed. And the second way is targeting specific groups, specific houses, specific tents for families, for specific names. And especially what happened yesterday, it was like this. The tragedy is this is happening, and I don't know if the number of the journalists, they will be killed. 238 will stop here. It seems that Israel, if no one holds her accountable or do any kind of intervention, other journalists, they were preparing their wills too. And they are preparing themselves that they are, the possibility to be killed is very close to their life, to end of their life. Like every Palestinian living in Gaza Strip. I know the media right now covering maybe much more what we saw before about this massacre against this journalist. But in Gaza Strip, every day there are tens of people, they were killed. Like today, for example, 69 Palestinians, they were killed in the last 24 hours. And you have over 350 people, they are already injured. Still people, they are dying as a result of the starvation. You have five people, they are already killed by the starvation. And among them, children. There is a child died today, like from 12 kilos, youth went down to 3 kilos until he died this morning. So the number of children already they were are killed as a result of the starvation, it's 101. And this is by targeting journalists. These are stories. Because each number now the world is, they are reading about the number of the people they are killed, or number of the people they are injured, or number of the people they are displaced, or some people they lost their homes. These are the journalists they used to cover the story, follow the story until the end, because they are part of this community. They are Palestinian, and they are covering their relatives. And some of them already, these journalists, they were already buried some of their families, because their families, they were targeted and they were killed. We are in a new era where the world and killing, it's become easy symbol for the Israelis. And Israel changing, I can say it, changing the world, that the killing has become more easy in front of the world with all these kinds of social media all over the world, and the media coverage and live coverage of what's going on in Gaza Strip. They continue. And simply because they are, no one holds them accountable. Actually, the opposite. There are many countries like United States of America still support Israel and try to justify what Israel is doing against Palestinian, in not just for killing and the number of the people they are already killed right now, 61,500 plus, over 153,000 people, they are already injured, and you have over 11,000, they are already buried under the rubbles. So United States still, they are justifying for Israel what they are doing, and not just only justifying, protecting them in United Nations, at the same time funding them with money and with weapons. Yes, these journalists, they are already killed, and many, like many other journalists, they were killed by American weapons, and it was used by Israelis, or there were other journalists, they were killed in Iraq, for example, especially Tariq Ayoub from Al Jazeera, I remember, and Mazen Dana, Palestinian, he was killed inside Iraq by American weapons near Abu Ghraib jail. So targeting journalists, it's something become easy for these kind of war criminals like Israel, and still it will not stop like this unless this world will do an intervention, stop this genocide, and make it difficult for the Israelis to continue to do what they do. No doubt we are seeing the expand of solidarity movement. But after 22 months, it's still, we need to do more. People, they need to mobilize and need to continue to do whatever they are doing, double it down, triple it, until we will be able to stop. To be honest Absolutely. With you, all the words, describe all the words, whatever I want to say, or anyone. Already, many other people, they said what we are saying right now. And we come back to say it because we feel that the people, they need to do what they need to do to stop that. But every house in Palestine and maybe in the Arab world watching or following the news in Gaza, these people we saw, they were killed the way how they are killed too. Like I was reading many reports today. You say every mom in these houses, they feel they lost their own children because their voice is coming, covering what's going on in Gaza. And holding the world accountable all the time when they do the reports about starvation, about displacement, about the hunger, about bombing hospitals. They try to show the world and they say, calling to stop that. And still we are in the, after 22 months and still who knows who's next. And this is the eyes of journalists right now.
Who knows who's next? That's the idea. You know, it was shocking to me that it's so cynical because Netanyahu did it in the context, oh, we're going to open up and invite international journalists in. And then there's this slaughter, this expanded slaughter, killing more journalists, as you say, down to their family, down to their extended families. It is unbelievable. And the whole world is watching. And it's hard to find an American journalist that will name a Palestinian, who will recognize the names of the people who are being killed. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, there is what I will say, and even like in my life, there are journalists, they are sacrificed their life to write about injustice and to document like what's happening to the people. They are oppressed and they were forced to leave from their homes or killed or targeted, immigrants, about all these kind of stories. And there are journalists actually and media platforms where they participate in the genocide, actually try to justify what's happening to these people. And we saw this actually, this is the country in the United States where you see the mass media here, the corporate media try all the time to justify for what Israel is doing. The world is shifting, you know, like the division between both journalist and here I call it media corporate workers, where they try to serve the goal of the genocide and justify it and reduce the react of the community by the way how they are telling the story. These people in Gaza Strip and in many locations in this world, we saw that in the war in Iraq in 2003, we saw that in Syria, we saw in many countries where journalists become a target when they are following and try to cover the truth, what's going on for the people, and especially when it comes about injustice and the suffering of the communities, the suffering of the people. Yes, we speak about like 238 Palestinian journalists. Not all of them acknowledged and recognized, by the way, Dennis, by the International Union for Journalists or many organizations. But for Palestinians, they are journalists. These people, they sacrifice their life. But you have right now tens of Palestinian journalists. They are right now in Israeli jails. They are tortured. Some of them from Gaza Strip, some of them from West Bank. And even some journalists, whatever they try to cover, we saw that in Jenin, we saw that in Tulkarem, in many different parts of West Bank, they are targeted and they were arrested. And this has happened in all these 77 years of Israeli colonial system against the Palestinian people. Not just assassinated, they tortured, they tried to put to pressure. Israel, I want to go back a little bit in the history, where Israel, they used to have a military censorship for every word published in any Palestinian newspaper before 1995. Everything published, they had a military censorship for everything published in the newspaper. Israel, all the time, they try to cover and to hide what they are doing and try to censor every voice coming to stand with Palestinians, like what we saw. This is not different from United States, what we are witnessing in the American universities, when the students, they come out to protest, or teachers, they try to teach about social justice, including Palestine, ethnic studies. This is connected. It's the, this is the new, like I call it, connection between what Israel doing in Gaza Strip and what the Zionist movement they are doing in the United States right now. All of this connected. And you speak about the American policy, they are very clear. American policy, they dehumanize the Palestinian, no matter who are they, journalists, doctors, engineers, children, workers, students. They are already dehumanized. Whatever Israel is doing, they try to justify it and make it like that. It's them, try to blame the victim, actually, in this case. And still, despite the shift, there is a shift is happening, no doubt. It's shifting a little bit here in the United States when it comes about the Palestinian narrative, Palestinian story. And even I hear now in reading reports coming from about Europe, against what happened, this massacre happened last night. They are speaking the Israel story, the Israeli narrative, and the way how they try to hide and cover their own story, it's not working anymore. The world, they can't see the reality, and the world is fed up with that. And this is, we can see how the BDS movement is expanding and growing up in the world. And this is why I say the only hope for the people, and this is actually not only me, this is what I hear from the people in Gaza. The only hope they have, the people inside Gaza Strip, is the people themselves here all over the world. This is the only, not the governments, not the United Nations. And the hope that these people, they will change this reality. They will mobilize, they will educate, they will take actions to change this reality and put the pressure to make immediate intervention to stop this genocide and to protect the 2.2 million Palestinians they are living in Gaza Strip, which most of them, you know, today I was reading a report. One third of the people living in Gaza Strip, they are already, they didn't eat one meal last a few days. And this is not coming from the random people, it's coming from the World Food Program. And they speak about this in very clear way. The last few days, there are one third of the people in Gaza Strip, they are not able to eat one meal. And this is the reality, it's happening. And try to play this kind of game, they show this blame, the drop the food, and this, the dropping the food, killing people in the ground, and it's nothing, it's not making anything to stop the starvation. This is why the Israelis, they are targeting these journalists, because simply they are covering this story, make it, send it to the world, to everyone to see, and to try to tell the people, hey, you need to hold yourself accountable. What are you doing to stop this genocide? But unfortunately, we lost these journalists, and as I said before, I hope no one will be killed from these.
It's horrible.
Or everyone living in Gaza Strip. But the question Gaza all the time, they ask themselves, who's next?
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're speaking with our good Ziad Abbas. He's the executive, a good friend, Ziad Abbas. He's executive director of the Middle East Children's Alliance. And Ziad, I know that you and Mecca have many connections on the ground in Gaza, as you say, and in the West Bank. Just give us a sense of the struggle. I imagine, is it still possible for you to get any aid to the people you work with there, or what's that like?
It's still very, very difficult. You are working with the mass starvation. Like, you have hospitals, they are out of medicine, out of milk for children, out of basic needs, and still very hard. And this is, as the number is increasing very fast. We saw the, how the number of the people already killed as a result of this bland starvation by the Israeli occupation is increasing, and it will continue to increase. We are still working inside Gaza Strip. Our focus is like, well, we distribute water, we collect, I mean, the program to collect the garbage. It's summer, it's like diseases spread everywhere. They try to clean the refugee camps and blast refugee camps in Gaza Strip. We have some clinics, malnutrition for the children, the babies, but they are doing the basics, nothing much you can give them. You have the other clinics try to help, which is the same basics, because you are not able to get any trucks. And sometimes when you think about the trucks, I know Israel, they make it, yeah, they allow the food, they drop from the blame. But the number that's coming from the Palestinian, actually, today, it's like not something like you can see it like in, it's nothing. You speak about 1,100 entered Gaza trucks. But not all of these trucks reach the recipients, the warehouses, to the distribution. Many of people already died while they are trying to get some stuff from these trucks. But the people they need in Gaza, over 8,000, this is the number, their number, actually, 8,700 trucks to get in. Nothing the food comparing. And it's like a drop in the sea. It does not make anything right now. If they will not open the whole borders and allowed all these trucks to enter Gaza Strip, the starvation, it will hit bad and more, and the numbers will be tripled. It's sad, sit down here, I'm speaking about that, but this is the reality. And the tragedy and the irony, it's like for us and for the people inside Gaza Strip, all the what they are facing, starvation, children, old people, young people start dying from this starvation, and the trucks of food or medical supplies or many other needs, clean water, medicine, anything. It's not far from, I swear, it's in some areas, it's less than 10 miles from them, the trucks. And Israel doesn't allow this to get in. And still the other people, they are killed while they are reaching out to the food distribution centers. Every day you have over 20 to 30, and the numbers sometimes go 40 to 50 people, they are already targeted. And we heard about the witnesses, and witnesses from Palestine, from Gaza, and other witnesses, they wrote about this, like how Israel, they are killing the Palestinians, even when they are coming to these food distribution centers. And simply, it's like in Gaza right now, I can say, I mean, day by day, the things is the lack of food, it's impacting everyone living in Gaza Strip. My colleagues, and they speak about themselves, and they are part of Gaza community. We have there 15 staff members living inside Gaza Strip in different part of Gaza themselves. And sometimes even when I ask them, Dennis, can you write something? If they say, what we will write. We already wrote about this. We already spoke about this before it was happening. And we already wrote about it and we spoke about it when it was in the beginning. It's happening right now. It's like they don't feel even the ability to write or say something because they are going through the hunger. They are witnessing their children. They are living in tents, most of them, and witnessing their children, their family. They are in hunger. They try to organize whatever they can to survive. And everyone in Gaza, as I say, it's like going through this. And for us, the work is very limited, but still, this is the way. We cannot stop. We need to continue. And all the organizations, there are many statements came from all the relief organizations, international relief organizations, demanding. And the demand is very clear. Open the borders, let us get the trucks, and we will be able to distribute. And United Nations announced this officially. They have enough food, will cover Gaza Strip for 3 months. It's in the border in Rafah area and ready to go in if they allowed it.
If they allowed them to come in, yes. We're speaking again with Ziad Abbas of the Middle East Children's Alliance. They're based in the Bay Area in Berkeley, and they have been working on various programs on the ground in Gaza. And Ziad, the West Bank, about 8 times the size of Gaza, doesn't make the news. It makes them even less than Gaza, but there is a full-fledged, uncontrolled ethnic cleansing taking place, and the brutality is unstopped, right?
Right. Gaza, I wish Gaza taking all the news, to be honest with you, because in the world there are many other issues. All the time you see distraction in the media and try to shift it from Gaza. But West Bank, yes, absolutely. It's not taking the right coverage. And when we speak about West Bank these days, it's not running the ethnic cleansing policy and especially the attacks by settlers protected by the Israeli army. It's happening everywhere. And they are attacking in very strong way in different parts, north of West Bank, south of West Bank, everywhere around the major cities. And almost every village right now, they have their own way to defend themselves, but they are very limited. When settlers, they are attacking, like what happened today, like in Ain Ayyub, this is a tiny, tiny area where many Palestinian Bedouin, it's near Deir Ammar village, near Ramallah, where 30 families, they were evacuated because the settlers, they are like, every day make it difficult for them to live in the area where they are living. And these settlers all the time, by different kind of security forces to protect them while they are attacking the Palestinian. And we saw that in Msafir Yatta a few days ago when they killed, assassinated actually, Aoud al-Hadalin, the teacher, and they kept his body. These settlers, they are allowed and they are protected. Even the killer, he was like one day in a prison, second day released. Even he's not under home arrest. And this is when we say, like when we speak about journalists, Gaza, West Bank, even in the United States sometimes, to be a Palestinian, it's enough for Israelis, for Zionist movement, it's enough to be killed because they feel every Palestinian, no matter where you are, where you live, you become a threat for the future of Israelis. State for the Zionist movement. And these settlers, absolutely, they are invading Palestinian cities and villages every day. The Israeli army arresting everywhere, destroying houses is every day, confiscating more land, expanding settlements. It's happening all the time in West Bank. And as I said, the settlers, like I can say, if we want to announce every village announced, we need like another 2 hours that they are facing attack every day inside West Bank by the settlers. People arrested, people targeted, people injured, and houses set on fire. Even people sometimes traveling between villages and cities inside West Bank, they are become a target for the settlers by throwing stones at them, and sometimes they shoot at them. Because it's simply, as an Israeli, as a settler, you are already protected, and the Israeli government, they allow, you know, protecting them no matter what will happen. But every Palestinian, even if they invaded your house, you try to defend your children, you try to defend your house, you try to push back, you will be a criminal and they will take you to prison and you will be jailed when you try to protect. And this is the case of many, many, I can see thousands of Palestinians. They are already arrested when they try to protect themselves, try to defend their own families or defend their houses or defend their land or their trees, just to try to push back to protect. They are arrested. And they are jailed, and some of them actually, this is the hard part, where they impose fine on them. You can, they impose them, for example, 3 months in jail or 6 months in jail, and you pay like $3,000 to $5,000. And it's the $3,000 to $5,000 that go to the Israeli government to go to continue do what they are doing against Palestinians. West Bank. There are, when you speak about ethnic cleansing in slow motion is happening. You can see people sometimes moving. They are forced to leave. Like the 30 families, they are already in Ain, near Deir Ammar. They are already forced to leave today from that location. And it's happening in many parts of West Bank. And it's the same, make the news and very hard. All these kind of marches, like daily marches, I call it, in the in Jerusalem, old city, how the settlers invading, their ministers, their officers, their Zionists, the most radical leaders, they are invading Al-Aqsa Mosque. The same happened in the old town, downtown, I can say, in Hebron City, the same, and the way how they are targeting the mosque. And all these kind all these kind of marches is to provoke the Palestinian and just to humiliate the Palestinian. And I can say almost every settlement inside West Bank, they are very active these days around against any villages or cities around them. And Israeli army, they are all over protecting them and keeping them safe. And even they are targeting the Palestinian, arresting the Palestinian when they try to defend themselves.
Ziad, we're just about out of time, but I want to ask you to share information about Mecca and if people want to know more about what you all are doing there, how they might become a part of it. What's the best way to do that?
Yeah, the best way, the people, first of all, people, they need to take actions and to get to the streets, and they need to go to the website for the Arab Resource and Organizing Center, ARAC. They should go to the website to the Palestinian Youth Movement. They should go to the Jewish Voice for Peace website. There are many activities organized around the area, in Bay Area and around. At the same time, for to learn more about Mecca work and what we do in Gaza, and if you want to support, etc., you can go for meccaforpeace.org. Mecca, M-E-C-A, for peace.org.
That's Ziad Abbas. He's the executive director of Mecca. And as always, honored to have you with us. We are so sorry about what is happening in Gaza and the West Bank in occupied Palestine. We're going to keep talking about it. We're never going to shut up. Thanks, Ziad, for being with us again on Flashpoints.
Thank you, Dennis.
You're absolutely welcome. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're going to take a two-minute break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Hani Al-Madun, who works, he's a senior director at philanthropy at UNRWA USA, and he knows a great deal about what is happening on the ground and the starvation that is expanding. People are not eating, and their bones are showing through. 2 minutes, and we'll be back. Stay tuned. Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We continue our coverage of the genocide in occupied Gaza and the West Bank. Joining us now is Hani Al-Madun. He's the Senior Director of Philanthropy at UNRWA USA. Hani, welcome back to Flashpoints. We come to you because you know as well as anybody what the struggle is on the ground and the situation around what appears to be a policy of starvation as a weapon of war. Can you give us a sense of what the situation is on the ground and how bad it is in terms of hunger and starvation?
Yeah, well, thank you for having me, and good to be with you and with your listeners today. For people who haven't been paying attention, Israel has made a decision mid-March this year not to allow any food into Gaza. Basically, for 4 months, the people of Gaza were being starved intentionally. Aid has been used as a weapon, and just for the past 2 weeks, food was allowed to trickle in. But as you can imagine, the Israelis are putting out production, quite a production of showing talking more about the aid and actually allowing less of it, but it seems everything they're talking about, we're allowing aid, but it is not trickling. It is trickling in. People are seeing some stuff, but it does seem like the Israeli government is giving priority for commercial trucks, not the aid one. So this is the stuff that goes to fill any convenience store or supermarket in Gaza, whereas international NGOs are not yet fully able to receive the aid to give it away for the people for free. There are some people who manage to give their aid, but it's obviously a bitter day than yesterday and a bitter day than 2 weeks ago. We are seeing some new stuff emerge in Gaza. The only thing that was keeping people alive in Gaza was some lentils, white beans. For example, this last couple of days we saw some rice, we saw some eggs, but it's still a ridiculous situation where one egg cost about $4 in Gaza. And if you want to complain about the prices of grocery stores in California or the Pacific, you know, think about the prices the community in Gaza who's been surviving what experts call a genocide have to pay. It is, as you know, I support the amazing work of UNRWA, the UN agency. I work with UNRWA USA, the American charity that supports their work. But this is the situation. In fact, earlier today, two kids have died actually in the hospital from malnourishment or malnutrition cases, acute malnutrition. And we're hoping we slow that down, and you understand you can't just give people who've been starved for a few weeks food. It needs a lot of medical intervention. But grateful for any help we're receiving. But, I just want to plug in the airdrops that everybody's been talking about. All these airdrops that you see and everybody's talking about them, Australia, France, everybody who wants to make a show and tell their voters, hey, we did our part for the Palestinians. If you combine all the aid dropped into Gaza, it doesn't add to more than 25 trucks. And Gaza needs about 500 to 600 aid trucks a day. But airdrops are, make a cool film. They make amazing headlines. The jury's out about the impact. We do that. They actually caused the death of a Palestinian man just yesterday, a Palestinian child, where the pallet dropped from the sky and crushed this poor Palestinian. And this is where, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Back to you.
It's sort of a very cynical program, isn't it? It's a way to lure people into a very vulnerable position and then kill them when they're starving and trying to reach the food. It's really quite troubling.
Yeah. Go you on, see please. That a lot at the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation site. These mercenaries that are being flown by Israel, they're American mercenaries, and they're witnesses and co-producers of the nightmare in Gaza. The Israelis shoot a lot of Palestinians there. These aid sites have been linked to the murder of 1,000 Palestinians who've been starved. And it's unfortunate. It is sad that they starve you and then they expect you to thank them if you give them a loaf of bread that was donated with your name. So where do we go from here?
Honey, UN Rapporteur for Food at the United Nations has suggested that it's really time to have an armed international force to guard the people and a program, a real program for food, which includes, 600 or 1,000 trucks a day. I guess that's what they need, even just to stay there. What do you think about that?
Well, obviously, if it was another country that's doing this, obviously everybody will be up in arms and like, let's make this right. But the Israelis have a sophisticated operation of lies, cover-ups, and misinformation, where they actually, with a straight face, do media interviews, and they make it sound like the UN are the bad actors, and they and their armored vehicles and drones are the good guys who want the well-being of the Palestinians. So it's a very twisted world where the Israelis are specialists in covering up the reality in Gaza. They defame people, they attack people, and they, you know, you've seen the publications where they say the hunger is staged. Look, my family runs a network of soup kitchens through the Gaza soup kitchen, and the hunger is real. It is a starvation, it's a man-made famine, and we see it, and the sad reality is that children and the elderly are the ones who are paying the toll for this, because they're not the ones who are going to race after the pallets falling from the sky or walk for 5 kilometers to get to the American aid sites. So we are basically, the UN has not been allowed to give, to bring in aid into Gaza in a major way. And that's calculated. I'll give you an example. UNRWA has about the equivalent of 6,000 trucks outside the borders of Gaza waiting to be allowed in. I understand as of last week, only a trickle, maybe like 10 trucks from the 6,000 trucks were allowed. And it's not just UNRWA, also the World Food Program are not getting all their stuff. And also other American not-for-profits who want to do good work are not allowed as well to do as much as they can. And the point is to create that disruption and create that pain in Gaza. So in their mind, the Israelis think the more suffering the Palestinians have, the quicker they will surrender. But the reality is Israel controls 75% of the land of Gaza. They've killed more than 60,000, 61,000 Palestinians are dead. More than 100 people are maimed and injured. 2 million people are displaced, and somehow the Israelis are not satisfied with all the pain and destruction they've created in Gaza. You know, I was reading a quote earlier that's attributed to Stalin, where he said, sometimes it's better to go too far than not to go far enough. And I feel the Israelis have gone already too far, more than 20 months ago, but the world somehow is not acting.
Honey, what we're going to let you go. We know you've got a lot on your mind and a lot to do. What are you recommending from your perspective and your work in terms of UNRWA? What are you hoping? What are you recommending? What do you think the best thing is that people can do who are really concerned about this expanding and expanded use of a weapon as a food as a weapon of war? What are you suggesting these days people do?
I'll put my UNRWA USA hat and say go to UNRWAUSA.org and just see there's some advocacy, calls for advocacy. You could support, learn about the different things you could help Gaza. But also, this is beyond. I'm taking off my UNRWA USA hat and telling people to be responsible voters. Go to their member of Congress coffee and let them know you care about this. You know, this is the way to end it, where these members who are being flown now to go to Tel Aviv to spend their summer with a vacation paid for by the AIPAC, you know, these folks need to be reminded that they do not represent the American public as well as they should, or they do not represent the best of humanity. And so that's one. And two would be to spend your dollars where your values are. You know, there is no need for you to support bad actors, you know, these tech companies that their AI is being used in Gaza to murder families and erase neighborhoods, you know. Everybody somewhere in America, we're blessed. Some of us have stock portfolios where they could look at these companies and make these conscious decisions. You know, we only can do this if we work together. You know, if you write off like, hey, what's my investment going to do? It will make a difference. And, you know, wherever you shop, you could need, you know, you care about this. This is not controversial. You know, kids should not be starved. You know, you're not making a political statement. This is all man-made and this can be stopped. So actions like that, showing up, speaking, supporting, in social media, share stories. You know, this is all real. We don't have like a Hollywood studio in Gaza making up stories. Every Palestinian who's been killed, you can have their name, their age, and all that.
Yes.
It's written. It's even been published by the Washington Post, every single child as of last week. So this is the reality where we as Palestinians, that is, we are pushed, we are asked to prove our pain. Nobody else in the world is put under those circumstances.
Wow. Well, we really do appreciate you taking the time out. We are incredibly sorry for what is happening here and how the United States of America is still shipping Even the ones who, even the folks who say, oh, it's terrible, keep shipping, keep signing on to these massive weapon shipments. I don't know what they think these weapons are doing other than really sustaining and expanding genocide. We are sorry. Yeah. And thank you for taking the time out for us.
One last thought before I go.
Yes.
Thank you for having me, but also hold your progressive members of Congress accountable and your governor. They're also co-producing this situation in Gaza. It is not a Republican issue. This is a humanitarian issue. This is a human rights issue. A lot of people are complicit in this. Thank you for having me, and reach out anytime. I always enjoy speaking to your audience.
Thank you for taking the time, Hani Al-Mundun. He is a Senior Director of Philanthropy at UNRWA USA. Please be safe, and we'll talk to you soon. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. And I want to share with you, before we go to Medea Benjamin, and she's been in the streets quite a bit, we want to read this poem called If I Must Die. You might remember Rafat Alaria, a wonderful poet, writer, teacher in Gaza, was murdered earlier on in this genocide, wrote this incredibly powerful poem, and I think it's more relevant now than ever. So let me take a shot at reading it for you. If I must die, you must live to tell my story, to sell my things, to buy a piece of cloth and some strings, make it white with a long tail, so that a child somewhere in Gaza, while looking heaven in the eye, awaiting his dad who left in a blaze and bid no one farewell, not even to his flesh, not even to himself, sees the kite, my kite you made, flying up above, and thinks for a moment an angel is there, bringing back love. If I must die, let it bring hope. Let it be a tale. Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. This is your daily investigative news magazine. We're coming to you every weekday from 5 to 6 over the Pacifica Radio Network. That's KPFA in the Bay Area. Joining us now is Medea Benjamin. She's the co-founder of the woman-led peace group Code Pink. She is also co-founder of the human rights group Global Exchange, and she's done a great deal of other things. We could spend a lot of time on that. But Medea, I know you've been spending a lot of time resisting this genocide, being in the streets, organizing. Let's begin. I'd like to get your take on this absolute attack on journalists, this murder of hundreds of a journalist on purpose, and such a cynical moment where you've got Netanyahu saying he's thinking about opening the doors. It could be dangerous, but he wants journalists to come in. He doesn't want anybody to come in. Give us your thoughts at this moment, please.
Well, it's sickening. I think that now it's over 200 journalists who've been killed. To see Netanyahu talking about letting in international journalists and guaranteeing their safety at the same time that he is targeting, they don't call it a mistake, targeting journalists and targeting Al Jazeera. And I was just out at a protest, and one of the signs that one of the women was holding up is you only target journalists when your enemy is the truth. And I think that is so apropos to what we're seeing. The truth is what Al Jazeera has been giving us. These journalists have been risking their lives now for over 20 months, and they continue to do so. And it's just remarkable to hear the journalists still on the ground in Gaza who go on. And I don't know if you heard, Dennis, but I just heard it was like an essay that Anas wrote. Have you heard that?
No.
Well, just as you were calling, they were reading it on Al Jazeera. It's absolutely mind-blowing. It's beautiful. It's profoundly sad. But these journalists, you know, they know that there's a target on their backs. They know every day that they go out might be their last day. And they are doing it to bring the truth to us. So allowing Israel to continue to get away with this is just, you know, we're beside ourselves and we don't know what to do. You know, we keep demanding an independent investigation, accountability, but it keeps falling on deaf ears because Israel refuses that. I think we do have to push for international journalists to go in because it would definitely be harder for them to kill journalists from outlets like CNN or CBS. But will they allow them in there with the freedom to go around and see what's really happening, or will it be on Israel-guided tours like they have been doing with people like Witkoff?
Yeah, that's a concern, Medea. That's a real concern. I'm also concerned. You know, I'm talking to you from the Bay Area, talking to you from California. And we got two senators here who keep signing on to these massive shipments of weapons, of these massive bombs. I don't know what they think they're for, and then they sort of say, oh yeah, well, that was terrible, that they shouldn't be killing all these people. Where is your hope now? Can we change the minds of these after all this time? Can we get these liberal senators to listen?
Well, I'm actually very surprised that the senators from California are still voting for more weapons. When you have, you know, if you look at the history, Dennis, of these votes that, thanks to Bernie Sanders, we get to see where the senators stand. The first one, there were 19 senators, and then the second one, it went down to 15. And we were surprised, except we understood that it was backlash, and particularly against ones who were targeted by AIPAC, like John Ossoff from Georgia. But then this one happened, and we got all the way up to 27. Now, I'm sure your listeners think, why aren't we getting, you know, 90%? But 27 of the Democrats is the majority of the Democratic caucus. And that was, for what we have in Congress, that was historic. But we didn't have either of the California senators. And that is just horrific, given all of the mobilization that's been happening all over the state. I'm in Los Angeles right now, huge demonstrations every single week. I know in the Bay Area there's constant demonstrations. And also when these senators see the opinion polls that say only 8% of Democrats support Israel's campaign of genocide in Gaza, and yet they continue to vote for weapons. So I am very surprised by it. And I think they're going to have to change because the pressure is just building and building on them.
Listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, speaking with Medea Benjamin. You say there were protests in Los Angeles today. What was that like? What were people saying? What were they doing? Is their rage growing? I guess some people, I've said, it's like, what else can we do? And it's a bit of hand-wringing, but, you know, I don't think we have the right to wring our hands when this kind of genocide and the way they're using food as an absolute weapon of war. I mean, there are the big bombs that they're dropping, but it's also the food bomb. And it's amazing that they get away with this. And they and you got Netanyahu saying, we're doing our best, and it's Hamas. How do you respond every time you hear, if at all this subject comes up in corporate TV, it always ends with Hamas?
Well, first let me respond to the protests that are going on in Los Angeles. There's protests twice a week at the Israeli consulate. There are protests. We had one yesterday where we went to the home of the Congressman Ted Lieu. And I know you in the Bay Area, there have been lots and lots of protests at the homes of people like Nancy Pelosi, but it was great to go to the home of Ted Lieu here. There have been, yesterday we also did a walk through down to the beach in Santa Monica and Venice and then up through the canals. And the support was unbelievable. There was one family that ran in their house and got out their Israeli flags. But other than that, it was really, really supportive. And they tell me here that the tide has definitely turned. When there were other walks like that, they got a lot of negative responses because it's a heavily Jewish neighborhood. So I see the tide turning not just in the opinion polls, but in the activities that people are engaged in. And then seeing the town halls, even Republican town halls, like this guy Byron Steele, where people just said, over 2 million people are facing starvation and you are supporting this. And they went on so long that they had to close down the town hall, and that's in a Republican district. So I see that as very positive. And in terms of this starvation situation, I don't see how this administration can continue supporting this Gaza, quote, humanitarian foundation. Let's just call it GHF, because I hate to use the word humanitarian when talking about it. But the pressure is mounting there as well. So I think that we have to listen to the people like Bissam, who continues to report from Gaza and just said, look, as things get worse, your responsibility is to increase the pressure. And that, of course, is what we have to do. And I don't know if you've talked on the show about the members of Congress who have taken their recess time when they're supposed to be in their districts to go to Israel. Have you talked about that?
No, please.
Well, every 2 years, it's like a pilgrimage. In fact, former Congressman Gates called it a congressional Hajj that is supposed to take all the freshmen congresspeople, Democrats and Republicans, to Israel in their first year in office during August recess. And it is crazy that this tradition still continues. You have Democrat Steny Hoyer, who has bragged that this is his 23rd trip that he has led to Israel. And yet something interesting happened this time, Dennis, which is that the Republicans who went, there were about 20 of them, they were seated next to Netanyahu grinning. And the Democrats, it was really hard to find any pictures of them. They certainly didn't want to be seen with Netanyahu. Many of them in their Twitter feeds were tweeting as if they were back home in their districts and refused to even say they were in Israel. So I think there's a lot of embarrassment among the Democrats. On the one hand, they still feel the pressure from AIPAC and their party leadership to go on these trips. And on the other hand, they know where their constituents are. So again, it's another example of how the tide is turning, and we have to really shame all of those Republican and Democratic Congress people who chose to go to Israel instead of being in their districts during this August recess.
Medea Benjamin, Code Pink, always appreciate your information and your devotion to resistance. You really are an example of a way to live. Thank you, Medea, for taking the time out to be with us today.
Thanks for having me on, Dennis. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. And you are listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. And I'll just say this, as a Jew and the grandson of a great rabbi who was a peace person, I'm speaking out, and I am ashamed of those folks in Israel. Stay tuned.
And that does it for another episode of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Miguel Gavilan Molina and Kevin Pina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. Our theme music is written and produced by Charlie Lang. For questions, comments,